Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I thought I would introduce our amazing special guest, Mr. Mark Voros. Is an Australian entrepreneur who has been innovating, I guess, the business game for many, many, many years. He challenges the business landscape and has created many disruptive business models. He is the founder of Wizard Home Loans, and he is also the chairman of Yellow Brick Road. I was fortunate enough to be interviewed by him last week on his podcast, The Mentor. And we had an overwhelming response from the community and like-minded business owners that are feeling the same way as we are. We were very reactive. Tonight, we want to be more proactive and give you some actionable tips and tricks that you guys can, you know, implement into your business straight away. So without further ado, I would like to have Mark join us. How are you doing?
Pretty good, thanks. Pretty good.
Good. How are you feeling after our chat?
Yeah, very good. It was, as you say, a good positive response. I got a lot of people responding on my various mediums talking about how well you conducted yourself and how positive you are, which is cool. It's really good.
Thank you so much. Again, it was this overwhelming sort of feedback. It was good. All of it was great, but it was emotional. You know, so many people still reaching out saying they haven't had the government support yet. You know, they have so many landlord questions. Like, I've got like 100 questions that I could curate for you tonight. So what did you sort of feel on your end? Was it the same sort of response? Are they still pushing back on how they're feeling?
Yeah. The answer is yes. And I'm getting questions about how do you make the application? What happens if I wasn't in business this time last year or this time the year before? I'm a new business person. Or I had people who talked about having their businesses in various entities, and they sort of lose out from that basis as well, you know. And a smart way to run your business, by the way, structure businesses, if you're setting up a new division or a new business, is put it into a new entity, but that new entity can't show that it had any business this time last year, so that they can't make the comparison of the drop. The problem with these things is that governments try to produce a solution that is going to cover the majority of people. And of course, what that means is going to be a whole lot of other people who don't fit in neatly into the box. And unfortunately, that's going to create a lot of frustration, which it has. Hopefully, governments can get their head around, you know, the various ways of fixing these problems. But right now, those people are going to remain frustrated.
And I think that has been one of the most commonly asked questions with people that were falling through the gaps.
Yeah.
Do you have any suggestions for them, like in particular? You know, they've started their business, say, this time last year, and they're asking for financial records, you know, 2019. You know, are they forecasting, like, what that would look like?
No. So right now the answer is a blunt, you don't qualify. That's it. You're not going to get anything. So, I mean, my only response to that would be to petition up. If you could get a whole lot of people who petition around with the same problem, you know, create a petition. And see whether you can get 1,000 people who are in the same position or 10,000 people in the same position. Open up a Facebook page which is talks about this particular problem. Go to your local member, talk to your local member. Local members, by the way, do have sway in government. The last thing a local member wants is for people in his or her area to start to think that they're not doing a good job, and that when the next election comes up, particularly this time next year when the election comes up, they don't want to be elected out because they couldn't help you at this time. So certainly bring it up. I don't think it's – don't say nothing. I mean, last week I had a good whinge. The week before I had a good rant. And, you know, because I felt as though I had to say something. I think equally, if you feel as though you've, if you're falling between the cracks and you think it's unfair, then don't bottle it up. It actually helps if you say something and find someone to say it to. And I'll be going to my local member first off. That's about the only place you can go. And I'm talking about my local Labor, my local state member, whether it's Labor or Liberal, and my local federal member, whether it's Labor or Liberal, because they both contribute to the payments.
So on my end, I've heard that the business grants aren't enough. I don't know if you're getting the same response, but a lot of people are sharing with me that what they are being given is just not enough to cover what's happening right now. Are you getting the same response on your end?
100%. So, and it definitely is not enough. But again, the government's response to that is that, well, we're not trying to actually cure the problem. We're not trying to remedy the problem. We're just trying to give you a leg up for the next few weeks. What one would hope is that the government realises that it's not enough, and that in, if they extend beyond, say, the end of August, that they will have to put their hand in their own pocket again and give us some more money. But the problem is, and this will be the problem for the future and for our kids, is the government has to get this money from somewhere. They're either going to get increase our taxes, or they're going to go and borrow it themselves at the moment, which means we're going to have debt which we have to pay off for a long time. So it's a quick fix now for a lot of pain later. I'm trying to be a bigger person at the moment. My own business, I get businesses losing $100,000 a month at the moment in their accommodation businesses, like hotels and, you know, resorts that I have in our family has. And for me, I'm just taking the view, and I may be a bit fortunate others, but I'm taking the view, I just have to suck it up. If I don't qualify. So I'm just going to have to suck it up, because I can't run my business relying on governments to give me money. End of story. That's the way it works. If the money's available to me and I qualify, for fuck's sake, I'm going to take it. I'm going to grab it with both hands. Take it off the table. But if I don't qualify, I will make a noise and I'll moan to whoever it is I need to moan to, and I'll put it in writing. Then I'm not going to just sit on that. That's not enough. I then have to start doing something myself about survival. Because there's nowhere else to go.
So on that, and you've been in the loan business for a very long time, my question is to you, do you think that small businesses should be taking out small business loans now?
Yeah, I do. You have to look at what do I need? So right now, start again. You have to sit down and say, what's my revenue going to be? It may be nothing, but what's my revenue going to be? And what can I get as a grant if I get anything at all? What are my expenses? Which expenses are discretionary and which are non-discretionary? What can I put on hold or park for the time being?
Sorry, Mark, what does that mean to people that don't understand that?
Discretionary? Okay. Yep. What are the things that are fixed I can't not avoid? So maybe it's your landlord rent. Maybe it is. Maybe it's some wages to some people you must keep in your business no matter what, because you just can't afford for them not to be here. Well, you know, like everyone's going to have to, you're going to have to do a deal with everyone. So sit down with those people and say, look, so-and-so, I can't afford, the business is not in any income at the moment. I can't afford to pay you. Are you in a position to take annual leave? Or are you in a position to take unpaid leave? Or are you in a position to defer the amount of money that I owe you for a period of time? That's a loan. That's a loan from your employee. But I will give you that money plus 5% interest or 10% interest. Do a deal. Go to your landlord. Do the same thing. Look at every single expense line and find, because you're going to survive.
And hustle.
And hustle. Every single one of them. every single one of them, and explain the situation. There is nothing wrong with being affected by, or you have, you're running a bad business. This is government introduced lockdowns, which you're not responsible for. It's got no reflection on you. And for heaven's sake, please talk to those people who you have the obligation to pay and do a deal.
So you know, on that.
Well, Natalie, no, sorry, before you ask the question, the government keeps telling us we're all in this together. Actually, you, the proprietor, or you, the self-employed person, or you, the business person, have to go to your staff and your contractors and your landlord, if it's your landlord, or your bank, if it's your bank, and say, we're in this together. You have to. We all have to start saying this. It doesn't matter what the government says. They're not in it with us. We are in this together with the people that we're directly responsible for.
Yeah, and I think it's a matter of having open conversations and honest conversations and hard conversations. These
and
are
with
hard.
Yourself.
Yeah, of course. So with that, we had a lot of questions about landlords. And what would your advice be to, I mean, I had like at least 10 or 15 people say to me, their landlord is not willing to negotiate. What would you say to them? Like, I mean, is there any kind of creative sort of way that they should approach their landlord? I mean, one person was threatening to sell the business during this time, the building.
Well, let me just put some practical stuff out there first and foremost. Landlords who own retail premises, let's assume we're talking about retail tenants, your followers. Landlords who own retail premises, if they have a tenant, that tenant is gold.
I think I am.
You know, you are. If you're a tenant, if you're a retail tenant of a landlord today, and trust me, because I've got tenants, I'm a landlord, I have tenants, you are gold. Because the last thing a landlord needs right now is for you to close your business up and something go wrong and have to go and find a new tenant. That's the first thing. Look, it costs us legal fees. They have to advertise it. They may not get the same rent. They may not get a tenant. Let's say it takes them 1 month to find a tenant. It means they get zero rent for 1 month. Or right there is a reduction in the rent, because I tell you what that means.
And the rent-free period.
Well, correct. And that, just say I can get a tenant though in 1 month's time, right? Right now, 1/12, I can afford as a landlord to give you 1/12 of your rent off for the next 12 months. And I can spread it evenly over a 12-month period. So I can say, let's take, if the rent is, $1,000 a month, I can say, just pay me $880 a month right now. Because I know, in a practical sense, as a landlord, it would take me at least 1 month. Probably, if I'm really lucky, it might take me 2 years if I'm unlucky. And I've had buildings where I haven't had tenants in those places for 2 years. Retail tenants. So remember your goal. So if you've got that in your head, you're the tenant, you've got to go to the landlord and say,
have that negotiation.
Yeah, let's be practical. Sit down but please don't go and demand it. Don't go and be a smarty and say, well, if I leave, you're never going to find. That's not how it works. You don't have to tell the landlord that. They know that. You send it, dear sir, dear madam, I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak with you. As you understand, the COVID has locked me down. My revenue is down. I'm trying to keep my staff, to keep my business viable in order that I can have a sustainable business and remain on as a good tenant of yours, and I'm enjoying the premises, blah, 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 blah. Suck up a bit.
Yeah.
Write a nice letter.
And I also feel like there's a level of negotiation there. My husband, just did the same thing with our tenant. We didn't ask for rent relief last lockdown, but this lockdown's been very different. And, he said, like, how can we come together, to find a solution? Like, we'll still pay something because you need your rent paid too, but, how can we come to an agreement?
Oh, good example. Let's say you've got 2 years left on your lease. Let's say you're the tenant, you've got 2 years left on your lease. Why don't you say, please don't charge me any rent for last month. I can't pay last month for July. I won't be able to pay August. But instead of me having 2 years left on my lease, let's extend the lease for 2 years and 2 months.
So you're recommending that we extend it?
Just back end the payment for two months at the end of the lease. I'll pay you at the end of my lease 2 more months worth of rent. I didn't mean extend my lease. extend the payment process. So at the end of my lease in 2 years' time, I'll give you my very last lease payment. I'll give you 3 months' worth of rent. That's as a starting place.
It's just an option to give them relief right now.
Yeah, he might say, well, that's novel. That's not bad. Like, at least I'm going to get my money and I'm going to keep you as a tenant. I'm assuming you're a good tenant, but I'm going to keep you as a tenant. At least you're trying to keep me whole.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
You've got to make the landlord feel as though you're trying to keep them whole. What would they otherwise get? Now, I will say this to you. You're going to get some real shitty landlords who aren't very nice, you know, and they will stonewall you. They usually use an agent in front of them so that you don't actually get to talk to them. Then what you've got to do is you've got to work the agent over. You've got to really work them over and you've got to put them in a position, give the agent a letter. So the agent's not just going to the landlord and say, oh, look, she rang me up and she can't afford to pay the rent. Give the agent a letter and the letter I just talked to, that type of letter, and let the agent then take the letter, gives the agent, that agent then has the opportunity to take that letter to the landlord. And then by the time you can go back and forth for a month, at least you can get a delay of a month while you're talking.
Yeah, 100%.
Buy time.
All right, so I want to play a little game with you.
Yep.
And I want you to pretend that you're a hairdresser.
Okay.
Do you reckon you could do that?
I'll try. Yeah.
So if you were a hairdresser or a beauty professional right now, we've had three questions that have like burned up my DMs. And one was, how would you continuously motivate your staff today?
Today. I'm the hairdresser. I'm the proprietor.
You're a hairdressing salon owner. You're Natalie Ann.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the first thing I would do is, I think the most important thing right now, I was going to say invite everyone around, but you can't. But the most important thing right now is that you've got to start communicating. So don't just do it by telephone and spend time with them. You know, given the fact that I, the proprietor, am not actually able to cut anyone's hair or look after anyone at the moment, I've got time on my hands. So I would make sure that every minute of my day is devoted to my staff, talking to them. Like I would send food to them. I would say, I'm not asking, do you need anything? I would send things to them. I'd make sure that it doesn't have to be expensive. It's more the thought counts, but send some fruit around. Send food, if you can afford more, send flowers. If you know that there's something they in particular they like donuts or they like croissants or they like, you know, blah, blah, coffee, send that. If you know they've got a dog, ring up those Muddy Paws people and ask them and send them around to do a dog wash because they're doing those sorts of things at the moment. I saw them driving around the other day. Think about something that's a gift, but not an expensive gift, a thoughtful gift.
Thoughtful.
Like, I'm thinking of you. And then you've got to keep reassuring them that everything will be all right. So, I mean, one of the things I wish our politicians would do, and we talked about the pantomime that's at 11 o'clock on every day, is that I wish I wish they would reassure us that everything's going to be okay. That's all we need. We just want them to say, as our leaders, everything's going to be okay. Well, you're the leader of your business. Tell everybody everything's going to be okay, because they can go home and tell their partner or whoever it is they want to tell their kids, or they just want to feel good. Yeah, Natalie Ann said it's going to be she said it's going to be okay. Mark said it's going to be okay. And they want to believe someone, and they're going to believe you if you're being thoughtful and reaching out to them. So you've got to continually communicate to them every day. And you've got nothing else to do. Do it every day.
That's probably the best advice that I've heard on Instagram for a very, very long time. So I appreciate that. I'm going to put that straight into, you know, what we're doing for our staff. So the next question is, how do you suggest Mark Boris hair that you manage your finances during this time? So I'm going to paint a little picture for you though. Most salon beauty based businesses live week to week. They always have. Some of them are still on paper. You know, they don't have tech or software, or they don't forecast or plan. How would you manage your finances?
So I presume they're not wage earners. They're like contractors or self-employed. Is that what we're talking
about? Both. For example, you've got like salon owners. Say we're talking to an average salon with four staff. The owner's still working in the business 7 days a week, you know, day in, day out with their staff members. Right. And they're local. Their rent's average. So that's generally an average salon.
Well, and are these people not earning any income at the moment? So the salon owners
said, "We're all in lockdown,
so I can't pay you wages. I can't pay you wages." Okay. Well, obviously you've got to help them go and get the government, the government payment that they're currently offering, the $600 and the $750 a week. Ask them. I mean, there's a dignity issue with this. Okay. So a lot of these individuals might feel embarrassed to go and do it. They can do, this can be done online. Ask them, can you help them do it online? I mean, a lot of these people will get nervous about doing these things online, and it's very government-based, administrative, a bit scary for a lot of people. So offer to help them. Sit down with them and on a Zoom call and actually, or some other form of call, whatever format you can get, even if it's just a FaceTime or WhatsApp video, sit there and say to them,
I'll help you through it.
Let me help you work through this application form so you can get the $600 or the $750 a week. That's the first thing. Second thing you've got to do if you're the owner of the business, I think you've got to, it depends on your own position, you've got to say, are you okay with your money? So let's sit down and work out how you're going to, how you're traveling for the next month. So what are you, ask them to tell you what are the rental, what are their rent outgoings, assuming that they open up, but what are your food outgoings? How can I help you? Can I get some food over to you? Do you need anything in terms of, that's not just offer, this is a financial assistance. So I would be saying, if I'm the salon owner, I'd be saying to these individuals. If the salon owner is not saying that to me as an individual, me the individual, I would be sitting down, you don't need a budget, you need a piece of paper, and you need to write down there what goes into your account, and right now it's going to be government payments, and make sure that's nailed, absolutely nailed. What goes out of your account every single day? Write it down. Cigarettes, Netflix, blah, 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 whatever it is. Not just cash. What goes out of your credit card, automatic payments.
Everything.
Every single item. And by the way, everybody should do this, whether it's COVID or not COVID, but there's a good opportunity to do it. Know what you earn. Know what money comes in and what money comes out. Kerry Packer used to only ask me one thing every single month for 4 years. And I had a huge business, a massive, we made $80 million a year. He would ask me every month, son, how much money came in the account for the month? Son, how much money went out of the account? How much money we owed and how much money do we owe? He said, that's all he gave a shit about. He said, I don't care about all these fancy net profits and this and that. Who cares? EBITDA, whatever it is, it's all irrelevant. He said, what came in, what went out? And I want to know that every single month. And then, excuse me, he would check the bank account, our bank account, and make sure that what I told him was there. How much money have you got in the bank? So if you're a person who's affected by all this, do you know how much money you got in your bank account? Do you know how much money comes into your account every month, or how much money you need to come into your account every month? And do you know where you're now going to get it from, because you're not getting it from the business? Do you know how much money goes out of your account? Of those items, do you know every single line item for the money that goes out of your account? Does anyone owe you any money? Go and get it. Do you owe any money to anybody? Stop paying them. Go and ring them up, email them, send them a letter. Go and, you can't see them, ring them up. Tell them, can we just defer it for a period of time? That's all. It just goes through every single line.
I love that. I love that you've kept that financial advice super basic. Like, what's coming in, what needs to go out, what are the necessities, can you eat, moving forward, this is what we need to do. And really, that's as basic as it needs to be.
Then reach out. If you've got a problem, you know, there's some reason, you might have a couple of kids or dependents or whatever, and the people have to eat and what have you, and you've got to put a roof over your head, you reach out either to your landlord or reach out to your boss and say, look, I'm in trouble here. And could I borrow a couple of $1,000? I promise to pay you back. You know, like, this, call out. I mean, we are in a sort of a bit of a national problem at the moment in Australia, and COVID's starting to present itself everywhere. And there's not going to be a quick end to the COVID issue. Hopefully, there's a quick end to the lockdown. But we need to start to change the way we think about things. I mean, to some extent, we've got to drop our pride, if you know what I mean. So let's be a bit more open and transparent. Make sure we absolutely understand every single nook and cranny in relation to our finances, what comes in and what goes out. That's our finances. When you're at that stage, the sort of people you're talking about, we're just kicking off, we've just been in this business for a little while, we're only interested in what comes in, what comes out. We live hand to mouth. I've been through that process. I know what it's like. you know, and you've got to actually, I used to make sure I sat down and every, you know, couple of months and knew every single payment I had to make.
That's amazing. All right. So keeping in touch with your clients. So I think this is a very interesting one. I get asked this all the time, especially, you know, today. We don't have that touch point with our clientele. You know, how would you suggest that small businesses can get creative right now and keep in touch with their clients? Because I think it's so important. If they're not communicating with their clients, when we reopen, they'll be like, well, bugger her off. I'm going to go somewhere else. She forgot about me during COVID. So what would you say to business owners getting creative on how they can keep in touch?
Well, that's a really good, that's like, this is a critical, what I call a critical point or a critical question in relation to a business, which the assumption first and foremost is you know the details of all your clients. You know who your clients are. You've got first, you should always have a list of your clients. So if you don't,
you're building that database.
Yeah, totally. Build that database. And it doesn't have to be digital database type deal. Just handwrite. I don't care. You write it. You need to know their name. You need to know their address. You need to know their phone number. You need to know their email address. And if you don't have all that information, now's a good time to start to find out all the details of everybody. Hi, how you going, Natalie? How you going, Natalie? Just checking out. You know we're locked down. You know, have a little bit of chit chat. By the way, just updating the records here, and I don't have your latest email address or what's your latest. What's what? Because I want us to be able to send you something that's it's new in the hair industry or newer, some new whatever. Yeah, I mean, you know what you're talking about, yeah.
Send them out the latest and greatest.
Totally, and start to build and or rebuild your client list. Start to and then in relation once you've done that, on the assumption you've done that, then start to reach out to all your clients. And you might want to do an email. I get it. You might want to sort of send out a note to everybody or a newsletter or something along those lines. You might want to send out some funny photos. But for me, I can't do it in the Yellowbrick Road business. We've got 180,000 clients, but for me, if I was in the hairdresser that you mentioned to me before, if I was
small businesses, they might have 500 clients.
I ring them. How you going? You know, like, or text them. Just when, how you going? And people go, oh shit, oh, that's cool. Peter just texts me. Like, that's nice of Peter to ask me how I'm feeling. You okay, Mark?
Makes the biggest difference.
My God, like it's such a big deal. Like, It is such a big deal. It's so cool if someone does that. And I think to myself, that's nice. I think that's nice. If someone I know maybe I haven't spoken to for a couple of years, sends me a text, so just checking on you're okay. You're okay.
100%. I think that's so powerful. And I think, look, I'm a digital being. I always have been. I think connecting, you know, with your clients through DM is really important. I think the Instagram handle is another piece of information that's really important because it makes it super easy to just send them a video. Like I do it all the time. I'm very dyslexic, so I hate email and I hate text. So I'd much prefer to like, you know, voice memo or, you know, send them a video, which is really personal to say like, hey, how you doing? Or this is what we've just dropped, or this is the latest thing, you know. I've just worked on my marketing flows. So when people purchase a product from me, they receive a video of me saying thank you to them personally. So they're little tweaks that we're making in our business to look after and nurture our clients.
And so technology is a really important part of this too. I agree. So it's cute and it's a real great surprise when you might be sitting at home trying to watch the Olympics or whatever you're trying to do during this lockdown period when you're having a break. And then if someone all of a sudden sends a video to you, just saying, how you going? Yeah, how cool is that? And it doesn't really matter to me what platform it comes through on, but which digital platform, but using digital and videos, most of us have got a smartphone today. You can easily take a video, even if it's a funny video, even if it's a silly video. Talk to your staff and your friends, but talk to your customers, and your customers say, oh, wow, that's cool. Isn't she funny? Like, because, you know, so, we all need a bit of a laugh at the moment.
That's the one thing that I talk about so much is humanizing brands, right? So I feel like, you know, people talk about branding and they talk about, you know, how to build a brand and how to build an online brand, but no one's really talking about how to make it human again. you know, like, and this is the one thing that you and I were talking about, you know, even with the 11 o'clock news, or, you know, how they're communicating, like how the government is communicating. I think communication is the key to all of this, is how the government is communicating with us as a community, but also as business owners, how we're communicating to our staff, how we're communicating, you know, to our clients. I think it's just so important and so powerful right now that you've touched on those things. Communication is really key, and we really need to humanize our brand. Now, what are the ways that you feel like people need to humanize the communication?
Well, it's, you have to be very careful the way you do it too. So you need to think about your audience. Your audience might be, in this case, just one person. You need to think a little bit about your audience. Therefore, you need to know a little bit about that particular individual that you might be reaching out to. It could be if it's a customer or a staff member, and tailor the communication to that individual. For me, and it could be a video, it could be a funny video, because they might be these sort of people like mucking around. It could be someone who you know suffers a little bit from, is suffering at the moment. So, you know, they're looking for some empathy.
It's one to hear. They want to hear you.
Yeah, warmth. You know, just try to tailor it. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all performing. That's what humans do. We perform all the time. And if you're performing, then by definition, it means there's an audience in front of you. So know what your audience is and perform to your audience. And I don't mean it's not being fake.
No.
Give them what you think they need, because that's a gift. As long as you are able to supply, give them what you think they need. And this is all about gifts and giving and being generous. And the generosity could be as simple as being empathetic in your discussion with them. And that would be about asking them about how you're feeling. As soon as you ask someone how they're feeling, some people say, "Oh my God, thanks for asking me. I would die and tell someone." You know, that's a really powerful opening stanza. How are you feeling?
And that's the one thing that you and I spoke about, is the psychology about beauty. And you asked me, you know, whether or not, like, you know, people needed to actually see us, and they feel insecure when they're not feeling beautiful. And it's so true. You know, it's one of those situations where we make women and men feel beautiful. We make them feel a certain way. And I echo that. I just think it's important to make our clients, our family, our people feel that we care. Let them know that we care during this time.
And by the way, I would say most people do care. I mean, because at the end of the day, you're running a business. If you don't care about your clients, your customers, your staff, as far as I'm concerned, you don't have a business. It's just transactions. And if you want to be in the transactions game, go and stand as a bank teller and just take people's money and stash it in a hole somewhere. So you're in the business, as you said, of people experiencing special occasions, you making them feel good moments. About special occasions. And, moments
actually,
in your life.
Mark, can I stop you? I watched a really powerful interview. Oh, actually, it was you on stage. It was today, I watched it on YouTube, and you were talking about the minute that Kerry Packer asked you, "What business are you in?" So,
yeah.
Because I feel like that will just wrap up really what we're talking about here.
Okay. Well, I'll give you
that was so powerful to me. Like, I was like, oh, I'm not in the beauty business.
Yeah, well, it's so, you often hear people talk about the purpose of the business. And the purpose of the business is to make money and to be successful and to be, you know, a shining star. That's sort of the purpose. I always thought that was to be the purpose of the business. I went into Kerry Packer's office when he was about to give me some money to take over half of my business, and it wasn't given to me, it went into the business. And all the deal had been done, and we'd been working for 4 or 5 months trying to put it together. It was quite traumatic and stressful, and I was deal fatigued. And I had to go and see Kerry, and I had to sit there, and he had 3 questions for me. Before he'd hand the check over that we had to bank into the business. And the very first question he said to me, he just looked at me blankly, and he said to me, "Son, what business are you in?" And my business was called Wizard Home Loans. So I immediately thought, my purpose is home loans. You know, that's what I'm there. I'm there to make money out of people, lending people money. I get it at one price and I give it to them at a higher price, and I might pick up the bit in between. And, you know, people can borrow money from me to buy houses. I mean, like that's as far as I ever thought about it. And, but before, that's what I thought. I didn't say it to him. Before I could answer the question, he told me, don't say home loans. He didn't actually say that word. He put quite a strong adjective in front of
scary phrase, home loans.
He said, don't say home loans. Oh, correct. And that was his point. And I didn't know what to say. I didn't have an answer for him. And he said to me, look, I'm going to help you out here. He said, I like businesses like yours, et cetera, you know, disruption, et cetera. He said, you need to remember something. He said, you're not in the business of lending people money. People don't want to borrow money from you for the next 30 years and have to pay you back every month. And they go through good times and bad times, and you always got your hand out for your mortgage repayment. And by the way, people are experiencing that right now with the banks. That's not your favorite person. He said, you're in the business of people's hopes and dreams. That's the business you're in. They hope and dream that one day they can own that house that's down the road, or they're so excited they want to borrow some money so they can build a garage and a granny flat at the back for their kids who have grown up, and they want to put a pool in for the young kids who have just been born, and or they want to buy a holiday home because they can't travel overseas anymore, and they want to go and buy a holiday home in Southwest Rocks or somewhere like that, or they've got a dream, they want to buy a place in Orange out in the country because that's where they want to retire. That's the business you're in, son. He said, you're in the business of people's hopes and dreams. Drop the word home loans from your business name. Just call yourself Wizard. He said, and Wizard and dreams and hopes. He said, it all works. He said, don't ever forget that. And he said, in every single advertisement you do, and every script you write or someone writes for you in terms of advertising, and every person you employ, and every shop front you have, that is your message, hopes and dreams.
It was so powerful. And guys, if you can take away, I mean, if you haven't seen it, it's on YouTube. I believe it was a Success Resources panel that you did.
Yep.
I watched it this morning, and because I just needed that. I don't know, I needed a kick in the face this morning because I had a lot to do. So I just turned you on and I got my kick in the face. It was great, but it was perfect because it was right before I was writing all my marketing flows. And for me, I needed to sometimes go back to that why. And everybody needs to really double down on their why. Take this time, work on your purpose, understand what business you're really in, because it does help you. Like you said, it should be in all your messaging. It should be like a part of your mission and your vision statement. And this is how we're going to, you know, get through this and be super positive at the end of it. It was so powerful.
Thank you, Natalie. You asked me a question earlier on. You said, what's a way I can interact with my staff? Well, maybe you can, if you can afford it or if you have the capacity, hold a Zoom call with all your staff and sit down and actually do it. Today we're going to do a hackathon. And they're going to say, oh, wow, what's a hackathon? Well, today we're going to hack into the business purpose, the purpose of our business. We're all going to sit around, just wear your sloppy Joe, your pair of sand shoes and whatever you want, and get a bag of chips and just eat shit.
We'll send you a pizza.
We'll send a pizza and we're going to do a hackathon. We're going to hack in to what business we're in. Not what you think. What do you think the client's idea of the business we're in? Now, what is a client expecting from us to fulfill what? And hack into it for half a day. You're going to have a bit of fun, you know, muck around, but have everybody there, from the person who sits at the front desk. Because everyone's view is valuable. You know, you could say to the person that sits at the front desk who may not be a hairdresser, say, well, so-and-so, what do you think?
Also get their clients in on the conversation. I think asking your clients, like servicing the clients on what they expect from you moving forward, you know. I ask my clients, I audit them all the time. I'm like, what more do you want from us? Like, how can we improve our service? I mean, especially going from the first lockdown, I mean, I'm Lebanese, like culturally, my family. So we're extremely hospitable. So, you know, we like to serve our clients like nuts and cheese and crackers and coffee and tea. And like when you walk in, I want it to feel like you're coming into my house. So if you're not greeted within 3 seconds, there's a problem, right? So all of those things just went away. So I felt really disabled as a person because I couldn't service her the way that I normally do, because I wasn't allowed to serve coffee and tea. I had to get plastic disposable cups. How was I going to do that on brand? You know, face masks, like we lost all this personality, you know, and then we couldn't greet them at the door because I had to sign into a COVID sign. Like it was just like this crazy, like flip on its head. So like, how would you make it more warm again? Like when we reopen, like how am I meant to greet them again?
Well, you know what, when we reopen, which is not going to be that far away, it seems like a long way, but you know, 3-4 weeks from now, we will reopen. You will reopen. When you reopen, you're going to be so excited, and so are your clients, by the way. And you're going to be so excited. I would say to you, make sure that you express that excitement and warmth and happiness to your clients. I want to give you a good example. A good friend of mine.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mine today, who I've known for a long, long time, maybe 20 years, he got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer maybe 18 months ago. Pancreatic cancer is a pretty bad cancer. He's only maybe 50, and he's got family and all that sort of stuff. And I saw him about I saw him late last year, and he didn't look too good. He was lost a hell of a lot of weight. He was going through all the various, treatments. He texted me today, and he said he beat it. And you know what's amazing? This is going to be like when we beat this lockdown. It's going to be similar in a collective sense. I was so happy for him.
Mate.
I just text back. Fucking awesome.
I don't know him, and I got goosebumps.
I just wrote fucking awesome, and then I thought, no, that's not good enough. Then I had to write some more stuff.
Send a video message.
I know, I just kept writing stuff and more stuff. And in the end, he probably thought, Lizzie, you're a pest, get away. Because, but like, I was so happy for him. And I think that I really ended up expressing it over a longer period of time. But I think that's how we're going to be when lockdown ends. We're going to be so happy for each other, for our clients, and our clients are going to be happy for us. We won't need to try too hard. I mean, be yourself. Just be yourself and make sure that everybody, you try and introduce back all those things that you miss. Not because they should be there, because they're things that you miss and that you miss doing for your clients. And show them lots of gratitude, because all of a sudden I think we really are grateful for our ability to actually work and to open our business.
I mean, so many of my staff have said the same thing. Like they miss each other like so much, and they miss doing hair. Like
they love doing it, and they miss their client. They'll miss talking to their client and say, well, what have you been doing? How you going? Like, so good to be back, eh?
And they miss the like stupid things that their staff member, like their coworker, usually does that annoys the Christ out of them. Like I remember one was like, I just miss walking in and you've got that dumb face on. And it's true. It's beautiful. Oh, my God. I don't want to get emotional because, like, that's
going to be. But it's so good emotional. That they tell you now that that's really cool. I mean, there is a lot of good things come out of COVID. Nothing good comes out of COVID, I guess, but there's a lot of realizations we've all
and
had.
A lot of learnings, yeah.
A lot of learnings. I mean, everyone keeps talking about the digital world. I think it's fantastic. The digital world has really boomed as a result of it. It's been, and we've all been forced to become much more digitally savvy, and that's been great. We fast forwarded our digital sort of our digital ability from where we were. We really have fast forwarded, so has the rest of the world. But I think also there's been a lot of other things we've realized about ourselves. We've realized about our coworkers. We've realized about how grateful it is the fact that we can work. We can actually go to work. We've also realized how good our family is to us, our friends are, how important our friends are to us, and how much we miss them. Like so many things. And the big theme that comes out of all of it is gratefulness, just being grateful. I'm grateful that I can, that I haven't got sick. I'm grateful that no one around me has got sick.
Amen.
I'm grateful that I can go and get the jab and it's free. I'm grateful that I'm grateful.
They're about to pay us to do it.
Sorry?
They're about to pay us to do it.
Maybe. Well, and I'm just happy to get it done for free and not have to, wait too long and all those sorts of things. And grateful to be able to have these conversations. You and I would not be talking to each other. But for COVID, I would never have met you. I would never have met the people that have DM'd me as a result of doing my podcast with you. And my world has broadened instead of contracting. And a lot of people may be thinking that their world is contracting. There is opportunities to broaden your world. And there's lots of people out there who want to talk to you. And try and broaden your world now. Try and open up your business. As I said earlier, you said it. You asked the question. Here's an opportunity to absolutely understand everything you spend. And where the income is going to come from. Here's an opportunity to know everything about your clients. Get your client list right and ready for action. So if this ever happens again, you know everything about your clients so that you can immediately contact them by whatever format you want to contact them on.
Amen. I mean,
and nobody would have held this conversation asking me for these practical tips, but for COVID. So Natalie Ann has gone out and, showed some initiative here and parlayed all this out to all the people who follow you, and I'm happy to do it too. So I feel privileged and I feel grateful that I have an opportunity to actually be asked these questions. These are things that I just intuitively do. But what I don't realize, and I should think, is a lot of people don't intuitively because they don't have the experience I have. So therefore I feel as though I must pay it forward. And I need someone like you to ask me the questions though. Because I don't know what people
so
need
grateful.
To know.
I'm so grateful. And I'm happy to ask the really, people feel like they're stupid questions, but I'm like, they're not. No one knows what this is right now. We've never experienced this in our generation. So we don't understand how to pivot right now. I had my staff asking me questions and for the first time, normally I have all the answers, right? I don't have all the answers. I can't even say I'll get back to you because I just don't know, So
well, there's an old saying that
I can even call you and be like, hey, help.
There is an old saying, there is no answer is an answer. So you said to me before, what are people going to do who fall between the cracks in terms of the various government grants? Well, there is no answer. There may well be no answer to that and that they just fall between the cracks. There's no way around it. Other than make a bit of a noise about it and try and build some awareness or put in front of a politician, being the local member.
I feel like that's a really practical piece of advice that they can action immediately. They might have their whole street in their LGA that is feeling the same way, that's fallen through the cracks. That could be 50 people already on that petition. I think that's super powerful and really strong. Guys, I want to give somebody the opportunity a little later to ask Mark a question directly. So if you want to come on and join us, then you will be able to ask Mark the question. Because I did the mentor last week, and usually at the end of your segment, you allow, the person that you interviewed to ask you a question. Yeah. I basically said no, probably because I really didn't think about it prior. And I was like, oh, I have a million. But no, I really wanted to pay it forward and I wanted to give someone else the opportunity to ask you that question because I'm sure you can add so much value to them. So we will get to them shortly. Okay. There has been buckets of questions in these comments. I don't even know how, like, I've been so interested in what you're saying. I probably haven't been doing my hostess job and reading, but I've got so many more questions that I can actually get to here. And one really cool question that we got was, despite the difficult times, what is the best way to keep your eyes open for opportunity right now?
Well, that's a really important one. In fact, I had a conversation with someone today when about this in relation to one of my businesses. When everybody's concentrating on how they're on survive, the defense. Yeah, there's opportunity arises. So let's say, for example, I'm just making it up. There's a hairdresser next door to you. And you both evenly own all the clients in the area, 50-50. And they've both got reasonably good businesses. But you're both getting hassled by a landlord, by individual landlords. Well, you might be able to join forces and arbitrage against the landlords. You might be able to say, well, we're going to merge our businesses. You know, or maybe someone has decided, look, I'm 62. Let's say the individual 62, you're 35, and they're thinking, well, I was going to retire when I was 65. You might say, well, have you got any interest in selling your business? Now, maybe you want to retire now. That 62, you've got to sort of be digging around and thinking where the opportunities are that are presenting itself as a result of COVID sort of pushing these opportunities out. And COVID does these sorts of events. Crisis always pushes opportunities out. As much as it hurts a lot of people and it creates a lot of stress, etc., there are a lot of opportunities to come up as a result of these environments. So there are a stack of opportunities. You've got to go out looking for them. You've got to be creative. You've got to be thinking about where's the angle. I don't mean taking advantage of people at all. I don't mean that at all. But taking advantage of situations to the extent that it suits the other party and it is helpful to the other party. So for me, it's also about right now is about being strategic. So what we tend to do when under pressure is we become tactical. What I mean by tactical versus strategic, tactical, I mean, what I mean by that is I'm responding. I'm just responding to things. So I get pressure from here. I respond. Someone rings me up about, they've got a problem. They can't afford to pay their rent, a staff member. My tactical response will be, can I lend you some money? How can I help you out? That's tactical. And we tend to be very tactical. And we get overrun with tactical stuff at the moment. But also, you've got to step back every now and then. And maybe it's on Saturday afternoon or sometime when you've got some quiet period and because you're not working. And think about strategic. Okay, why am I in this business? How long do I want to stay in this business? What's the value of my business? So, it may not be, but for COVID, like, let's say, how do I work out the value of my business? Well, you know, like, I'll give you a good example. Let's say, and you would know better than me, but I don't know if this is true or not, but let's say your business turns over $100,000 a year in fees.
Yeah.
Hairdressing fees, revenue. And you can find this stuff out pretty easily. What is the multiple that the hairdressing industry applies to hairdressing businesses that are operating in Glebe in Sydney? So, and the multiple means is, what is the amount of money that someone will pay me as a times the revenue I earn? So if I earn 100 grand a year in hairdressing industry, do they pay me to buy that business $100,000?
So for example, on exit, that's what you're talking about.
On exit.
Sell my business, yeah. What my business turnover, what the X of that is to get to the evaluation.
Yeah, correct. And they call that a multiple, okay? And you can find it. So do a bit of research, Google it. I mean, there'll be multiples for the hairdressing industry. There'll be multiples for the beauty industry. There'll be multiples for the laser industry, all those industries, beauty, makeup, the whole thing. There'll be multiples for each one of them. And then you say to yourself, okay, well, if my business before COVID was turning over 100 grand a year, or making a net profit of 40 grand a year or 50 grand
and
a year,
and it's 3x, you could sell it.
It's three times. It's worth 300 grand. Okay. Now, okay. So that's what my business is worth, 300 grand, but for COVID. But, you know, COVID will go and it'll come back to that. It should come back to that. Okay. That's today. Well, a strategic thinker would say, where do I want to be in 3 years' time? Do I want my business to be worth $1 million? Well, to be worth $1 million, and if it's a three times multiple or three times X, I need to have $333,000 worth of revenue in 3 years' time. So I'm $100,000 now. How am I going to build my business to $333,000? Does that mean I need to get six more hairdressers in the place, and each one of them is earning $56,000 for me per annum? And for media, $56,000 per annum, they have to be earning another $50,000. So they have to turn over $100,000. This is strategic thinking.
But it's also the way that you're explaining it. Most people don't think like that.
But that's how you got to think now. You got to think strategically.
But keep it basic. So I'm making $100,000. I want to exit and make I want to 3X that, 10X that. I need to double down or triple down or quadruple down on what I'm currently doing in order to be able to get that.
Correct. And how am I going to do it? How do I execute on that? How do I earn my revenue? Is my revenue people based? In other words, for every person I employ, I can make 10 grand.
Yeah.
For every hairdresser who has a seat, I can make 10 grand or 20 grand. I have no idea, by the way, but I'm just making things up. But, and then, okay, that tells me.
They could start an online part of their business, sell more retail.
100%.
They could rent some space, a part of the business, become, shared space. Yeah.
Then once you've got that strategic thought process, say, okay, well, over the next 3 years, in 3 years, in the example I just gave, I've got to have $330,000 worth of income. Okay, well, I'll go $100,000 now. I'll go $220,000 at the end of next year and $330,000 the year after, and start to build it out. And start to think, how am I going to do this? Because, these are great opportunities to start to plan. But it's no point just sort of dreaming. I'm not dreaming here. This has to be a proper plan that you put in place and you start to execute on and start to think strategically. And I think it's really important to start to think strategically.
Do you have any tangible, something that we could, or maybe we can do it together. I don't know if you have one, but do you have a business strategy sort of template that people can download, that they can fill out these sort of forms? Do you have anything that's tangible like that?
I don't have a thing for valuation, but I have a thing called my playbook. I have a playbook and it's free. So it's, and the playbook, with the playbook, there's 10 chapters in my playbook. And you go through each of the chapters and you have to answer questions. But okay. I speak for about an hour, I think it's about a half hour on each chapter. So it's a bit of a lecture series. And then it's on my website. It's on thementor.com.au. And what you do is it takes you through the 10 things, the 10 chapters that I apply to my business every month.
Amazing.
These are the 10 things that Kerry used to do with me at Wizard every single month. We did 10 things. What I've done is I've sort of explained them a bit. I've sort of, made them a bit more simple than the way Kerry and I used to do it. But, things – and the very first one, by the way, you asked the question earlier. The very first one is every month you've got to re-examine your purpose, the business purpose. You make – because, your customer's view on you changes over time and what they expect from you. Sometimes the more you do, the more they expect. So, you've got to revisit, am I on song? Is the business on song? That's all the first. Second one, my second chapter is about what I call it play defensively. So defense wins games every time. If you're a rugby league player, a rugby league follower, or a sport person in a team sport, defense always wins grand finals. And it's very important in business. We always tend in business to be thinking about, let's go make the revenue, blah, 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 let's do this, that. Yeah, but you got to play defensive. So have I got my systems in place? Have I reduced all my systems down to writing? Have I got all my insurances in place? Are my leases all in place? Where are these things kept? Have they been stamped? Have I done a will? That chapter's called playing defensive. And there's a number of chapters that talk about growth.
All of those things are so important when you are first starting a business. But not only that, when you're in a business and you feel like you are we're in this situation now, these are the things that they should be actioning right now.
Correct. And it's funny you said to me about Kerry. Every single month, Kerry had maybe 20 or 30 businesses he had invested in, not like mine, not like finance, because of a different type, rag trade businesses, all sorts of things. And he used to get us all to his house or his office once a month, and we all lined up. And he asked us a number of questions. And then on different days of the month, I would spend 3 hours with him, and Kerry would go through every single one of those 10 things that are in my playbook. Every single things like, and this sounds ridiculous, energy of the business. What's the energy like?
That's not ridiculous. That is so important. Like energy, yeah, totally. Energy,
especially
out.
Now.
Everything.
How's everybody feeling? Belief in the business. Do you believe in the business, Mike? Do you think, is this mortgage business called Wizard, is it going to be okay? I mean, do you still believe in it? And right at the end, he'd always say to me, okay, son, what's the exit? How are we going to exit this? What value do you think we're going to get when we exit? How are you going to get us to that value? You just asked that question about the exit. I know we talked about the strategy of building exits. What it gets is in front of mind. It gets in the front of my mind. I was lucky I had a partner, Kerry. But like most of these businesses have got a partner, and you can download this thing anyway, and you can talk to your senior staff or your husband or wherever.
I'm going to download it. I'm going to put the link in my bio so that everybody can download it and get what I just. I mean, I'm only on chapter 3, and I'm in. So thank
it works,
you. And it's free, so that's amazing. We've actually got a question from a girl named Fiona, I believe. Sorry, the lights are bright, guys. Have you failed at something that you thought was a no-brainer? That's a good question.
Yeah. I not in a overall sense, but I guess, but I, to be honest with you, I often make strategic calls in relation to my businesses, and I'll give you a good one. Yellow Brick Road originally was set up as a wealth management business. We did home loans, but our other main game was to make sure you retired comfortably. In other words, to give you financial planning advice and help you build, a plan for the rest of your life. My business today is called Yellow Brick Road Home Loans. It's no longer called Yellow Brick Road Wealth Management. And to be frank with you, I couldn't execute on the wealth management piece. And whilst I know a lot about making money and, I don't know. I'm not a financial planner. I'm a home loans guy. So I don't really know about financial planning. But I would say I think it's a failure from my point of view, because it got to a point where the regulatory environment was so tough that the people that I wanted to service in my wealth business were the people who aren't rich, the people who can't afford to go and see these really expensive financial planners. I wanted to sort of give financial advice and wealth advice to the masses. But the regulatory environment got so tough, it got to a point where it was going to cost me like $3,000, $4,000 just to give the advice to somebody who was maybe only had 50 grand's worth of assets, or even less. And they were never going to be able to pay me for that because they couldn't afford it. So I couldn't afford to service the people that I wanted to look after. And so I guess I did fail in my dream that I dreamt that, my dream was to build these business which looked after all those people who can't afford to get normal financial advice, pay 10 grand or 20 grand. And I just couldn't do it in the end. So I had to give it away. I sold that business in 2019. And I just turned the Yellow Brick Road business and we're just a home loan business. We lend money. That's what we do. So I did fail. Yeah, I failed. I wanted to do it. I dreamt about it.
Out of that failure, you've then now launched the mentor where you're fulfilling that goal.
The mentor is I'm helping people with advice. I mean, I don't really make any money out of it. So the mentor business is something funded by me personally, privately. It's about me returning back to people all the stuff that I learned from other people over the years, and I've been lucky enough to be with some of the best people in the world. I was with General Electric for like 5-6 years, the world's biggest company. I've had some amazing experiences. So most people never get an opportunity. That's why my game is to pay forward that stuff. I do regret. I just feel bad that I think everybody, the two things we deserve in life, we all deserve a roof overhead. I can do that with Yellow Brick Road. But the second thing we all deserve is to retire comfortably, because we work our ass off our whole life. We pay all our taxes. We raise our kids. We, you know, look after our families and all that sort of stuff. We work, you know, a million hours a week. A day comes, you should be able to retire comfortably. And I don't mean rich, wealthy. I'm talking about just comfortable. But today, to be comfortable, you need to have probably, given interest rates are so low and returns are so low, you need to have $1 million in the bank plus your house. That's what I wanted to try and help Australians do, retire comfortably. And I unfortunately wasn't able to do it because the regulatory environment was so tough. The amount of money it cost me to give one person advice, I was never going to get it back. And I just didn't have it in me to ask them for I couldn't charge someone $5,000 for that advice because I know they couldn't afford it. And so I had to give that one away.
You know, I've got a question. I mean, I always thought that your accountant, right, would do your financial planning. I'm now learning that that is not the case at all. So I don't know whether that was, you know, I don't know whether other people assumed that. But where do you go for financial planning or financial advice on a budget? Or how do you think that people can do that?
I don't think they can. That's the problem. I mean, today, one good thing about our system here is that we have superannuation if you're an employee. So there's compulsory superannuation from the employer to the employee, and the employee then gets the opportunity to direct where that money should be invested. And there are a lot of big fund managers out there. You see them advertising on television all the time. And it's not hard to Google them, who actually do a pretty good job and give you, there's a pretty good return. And in fact, the return is much better than what you get if you put your money in the bank. So I don't, if you're just a normal person, it's very hard to access financial advice. That was the issue. That was the thing I was trying to remedy, cure, because a good financial planner doesn't make money out of a client unless the client's got at least $200,000 of investable assets. So if you're under that number, you're going to find it very difficult to get a financial planner to help you. So if you're under that, for me, I think you can either try and educate yourself about the share market, but it's a pretty dangerous, it's a pretty volatile place. For me, I still think the best thing to do is invest in property and your business. And your business.
Right now.
Because if you're looking to have an investment that's going to be there for the day you retire, and let's say you're 30, then you got 30 years to ride, 30 or 35 years to ride out, or 40 years to ride out all the tough periods. You got to find an asset that grows without you having to do too much to it, and without you having to check on it too much. Like if you're buying shares, you have to
like
be dynamic.
What kind of property would that be? Like I'm going to call it the lazy property. Like what would that
okay,
be?
Well, for me, I'm not a, I don't want to be look like I'm giving advice, but because I'm not allowed to, legally not allowed to. No, that's okay. But I'll just talk generally. For me, I think it's important to buy property. For a start, you've got to buy what you can afford. Don't stretch yourself. I don't believe in stretching yourself in real estate. And for me today, regional areas are a great place to invest. Well, regional areas, and what I mean by regional, I don't mean go and buy a property in some place that's like, you know, 200 miles away and 200 kilometers away and it has no access.
No water.
Correct. Regional areas means is an area that it has a hospital, has schools, is close by at least half an hour, no more than half an hour away from an airport like Lismore Airport or Ballina Airport or Coffs Harbour Airport or airport south of us or Orange Airport. It has a hospital like those places do, has good schools, has good infrastructure, and has some industry around it. It can be a tourism industry, like Orange has got a heavy tourism industry, although that's doing a bit tough at the moment. Generally speaking, it's pretty good though. Or it has beaches or amenities. So those regional areas, to me, are generally speaking, cheaper than buying in Sydney or Melbourne or Brisbane. But by the way, if you can buy in Sydney or Brisbane, by all means, buy in those places. Yeah. But for me, I think you should be buying. So a lot of people, young people say, yeah, but I can't afford to buy a property. Yeah, but you're looking at buying a place in Fairfield if it's $1 million. I know you can't afford it. Fair enough. But go and look somewhere else. Go and rent somewhere in Fairfield for, you know, $600, $700 a week and buy somewhere where you can afford.
Yeah.
And pick somewhere that you can still buy a house for $300,000. It might be in South Australia. It might be in some part of Victoria. It might be in Cobram in Victoria on
but
the river there.
Do it. Yeah.
Do it now while you can afford and borrow the amount of money you can afford to borrow. And that way you're committed and make sure that you've got to go buy a place where you can get a tenant. And that's pretty important. Do a bit of research. Don't just go and buy something stupid and say, oh, well, I'll buy that and I'll go look for a tenant and you can't.
No,
find
I
a
don't
tenant.
Think anyone's going to hold you to it, Mark. No one's going to be like, Mark, but you
need to do a bit of work on these things. Because you're not going to get a financial advisor who's going to do the work for you because they're going to charge you too much money. And they won't be interested because you haven't got enough investable assets. But what you need to do is start to become an advisor to yourself. Start to do the homework and the legwork around all this. Pick one asset class that you can become really good at. And an asset class I think is easier to become good at is property, as opposed to the share market. Because the share market is a difficult one. And you need to be able to read balance sheets and profit loss accounts, and you're relying on someone else's interpretation. And then what you see today could change tomorrow. And the price of nickel might go up or go down, or the price of lithium might go up or go down. Or they told you there's a gold mine there, but they realize that the gold's too expensive to get out of the ground. Forget about it, okay? That's all too hard.
My little brother is how old is he now? 19. He does all that. And every time he talks, that's what I feel like I hear. I'm like, I don't understand. Stop.
Yeah, but he's living his life doing it. That's fair. I get it. But for most people, you're a self-employed person. You're doing people's hair all day long. You're doing 10 people in a day, or you're a barber and you've done 10 haircuts in the day and two shaves. And it's 8 o'clock at night and you get home. The last fucking thing you feel like doing, you start doing what your little brother does all day long. But you can start to look through realestate.com and domain. You can start to look at what prices are being what's being sold, and start to look at where there's more turnover and start to work out where the rentals are best and not the best. You can start, that stuff's really much more understandable, put it that way. And invest in that stuff.
I love that. All right. So in saying that, how hard do you think it's going to be for us to get a loan, a home loan now?
It's harder to get a home loan now than it ever has been before because lenders, we all know, I'm a lender, we all know that there are people who are doing it tough and that there are industries who are potentially may not exist in the future, like, you know, for example, travel agents.
Yeah.
They may not exist in the future. And or there are industries that are going to be volatile in the future. So you have to assume we are going to get further lockdowns. You know, in specific periods and specific places. So if you're a borrower, you should start to be well aware of what industries should I work in. And by the way, hairdressing is a good industry to be in, generally speaking. I mean, because you're not more affected than anybody else. You know, you're just affected as everybody else. You don't have a special, you know, the government's not particularly targeting you. But you're working for a travel agent and you want to borrow money, well, it's going to be pretty hard. So you want to start looking at career changes and start to think about, well, where can I go that's a bit more stable, a bit more acceptable? So, and by the way, you don't need me to tell you what those places are. You know instinctively right now who are the people who are likely to be affected in the future as a result of the change in the way we live with COVID. And a good example of the travel agencies is a definitely good example of that. And then start to build your career and or your reliance upon your income, which is what the lender's going to be interested in, because that's all lender cares about is where you're going to pay me from every month. Make sure that industry that you're getting involved in is one that's a bit more resilient as an industry relative to those other industries that are going to continue to do it tough for a long time.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. The second thing I'd say is we lenders are really keen to know what you spend your money on. So when we talked about earlier, knowing what's your credit card says,
I was just about to ask.
Well, lenders, we say give me your credit card statements and give me all your bank statements.
I can't believe that they went through my Uber Eats bill.
Yeah, totally. They go through Uber Eats. They look at your Netflix accounts. And they look through everything that you spend. And Tabcorp, if you're in there spending money at the races and et cetera. So it's a good idea before you go to borrow money to buy a home or borrow money generally, but just to borrow money on a mortgage. It's a good idea for the 3 months prior to putting your application to clean up all that shit and just have the necessary stuff, absolute necessary stuff.
Which is a good time to do it, because let's be real, we can't all spend right now. So that's good advice. Mark, I've got to ask you, my wedding industry friends are blowing up this chat right now. So I have another side of our business, which is the wedding business. They have been so affected, like the suppliers and the brides and the grooms. It's emotional. It's also very controversial in the sense that wedding suppliers usually rely on their deposits, for example. So they'll pay you make a down payment on your wedding in 12 months' time. This is the 12th month and they've cancelled the wedding based on COVID. But these suppliers live off those deposits.
Mm.
How do we go about it? Like, you want to give the money back ethically. You can't because it's 12 months ago. They rely on this for cash flow, right? So they rely on this, you know, deposit system for cash flow. Can you help us like navigate this space? Like, what are we meant to do in the event and wedding business?
Yeah, well, I've got a like a little resort that I take deposits for bookings. So you secure your deposit, your booking with a deposit, and off the back of that cash flow, I've got to pay groundsmen and security and pool people and all the other stuff, cleaners and painters, well, millions of people. And then COVID hits and we've just got three months worth of cancellation, July, August, September. And I was thinking about, I was talking to my agent, I got like a person who does all the bookings, and I was talking to him about it. And I also own a hotel, like an accommodation hotel in Darlinghurst in Sydney. We had to close the hotel. Because it costs us more money to turn the lights on all the air conditioning systems on than it did for us in terms of than we were getting in return in terms of revenue from guests. I was talking to the agent about this and I said, I think we need to, when things open up again, we need to say, and I think this could equally apply in the wedding industry, make it clear to people there's a new contract, a new agreement.
Yeah.
That when I can't fix what's happened, but from now on, just full transparent disclosure. Look, we need a 20% deposit and we will spend that 20% deposit. And if you cancel within a period of time, like, you know, whatever the period of time is, that 20% deposit is just not going to be refundable. I mean, I really do think, if you're a person who's a photographer for weddings, again, you got to say to your couple who are getting married, and they might be booking you for 6 months' time. Look, I need to get a 20% deposit now because I've got cameras. I've got to hold stock. I've got to make sure that I'm.
Not only that, I've got to respond to that. Somebody asked, why would they spend their deposits? Like, for example, if you're a dressmaker and you're a small business owner in the wedding industry, you use that deposit as a they're down payments. They're not like, I'm just holding this for your date. Like, this is, that's production cost. That's rent cost. They live off that. That's their cash flow. So I think a lot of people don't really understand how the business model works.
So just on the dressmaker,
spending a deposit on popcorn, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And you're not rewarding anybody. So just like in the dressmaker one, you might say, if you're the dressmaker, you might say, look, I need a deposit of whatever it is, 50%, 20%. And this is what the money's going to be spent on. I'm going to go and buy sequins, material. I got to pay the seamstress. I got to pay blah, 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 the designer.
100%.
And I got to pay the person. And I got to bring
the fabric
in.
They're not using it to go to dinner.
No. But by the way, if you cancel the wedding, you can have what I've got. I don't want it. It's no good to me. You can have it.
You can have half the dress.
You know, well, we have what we've made so far. I mean, if you want it, like, because it's not good to me anyway. I mean, you got to, what I'm saying here is that we've got to start thinking as people who suffer cancellations, if we want to take a deposit and we need to use the deposit to run our business, we've got to think of some way of making it seem fair to the person who's making the payment. They need to understand. Yeah, correct. And you need to understand. Otherwise, they will think you're out there, you know, boozing up and buying yourself a new car and blah blah blah, and buying yourself a new dress. You got to say, no, look, by the way, when you pay me the deposit to come and stay at my place, I use that to pay for, you know, these six staff. Here's a picture of them all. You know, and there's a groundsman, blah blah blah, and this is what they do. If you cancel, unfortunately, I can't refund it because that's part of the way I run my business. And, you know, I mean, I just think it's about being a good communicator and actually building a good case and making it not just not being prepared to communicate, but communicating well a good case as to why it's fair that someone should pay a deposit. And in the event that something goes wrong, you can only pay back half the deposit. Half has to be forfeited or whatever. Talk to them. Talk to these people and say, what do you think is fair?
Yeah.
And if they say, well, I'm not going to give you fucking anything, just say, well, then I don't really want to take the booking.
Amen. Well, I hope that helps everybody. Mark, you're a legend. You have given us so much tonight. I can't, like, I'm so appreciative. And I know the community is appreciative. And I know that you've got, like, people saying marry you. I can't take this shit seriously. But you have so many people that are, like, constantly, you know, singing your praises. Anybody that has met with you, has done business with you, you know, they're always saying what a top bloke you are. So,
but
you know, it means the world to me. And I'm super honored that I had the opportunity to chat to you. I'm very grateful, and I'm grateful to your team to making that happen, because it we need more people like you that are happy to pay it forward. And if I can be that bridge, you know, to help navigate some of these questions, I'm always here.
Thanks very much. That's me signing off.
Thanks for listening to The Mentor. Audio and production is by Jess Morley, and production assistants, Jonathan Leondis.